out there, everybody, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. With me, Cam Hale, and of course, as always, the man that needs no introduction, but always gets it, Mr. Kyle Phils.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here. Very excited to be in studio today. You were telling me off air about what you were going to be talking about.
Oh yeah,
the other day in the vehicle, and I've been looking forward to hearing this stuff.
Yeah, word. Right? Hey, I was going to ask you real quick because I hadn't had a chance to run it past you. What have you got any crazy book you're reading right now?
Let me see, because I'm always reading a couple of books at the same time. Are you talking about stuff for the show or just like
show books
in general?
Show books.
Yes. Show books. I've been reading this book about like trucker sightings.
Oh,
more stuff about that. We've done a show about that in the past, but recently I got my hands on another one and I like those encounters. So I think I'm going to be talking about that that exact thing on the upcoming Elite Show.
Oh, word.
Right.
Well, the reason I'd ask is because I started reading Lyle's book, The Sinister Swamps, and going through some of it. And I was going to say, you need to check it out whenever I finish knocking it out. He'd sent us to us a while back, and we've got some mini books as we're going through them. But when I finish it up, I'm going to give it. You need to check it out.
Yeah, for sure.
You would really, really enjoy it, too. And I had talked to Lyle, I guess it was this past weekend. And he had told me that he had seen a rough copy or a rough cut of all the video and that he thinks it's going to be out pretty quick.
What's it going to be out on?
That I couldn't tell you. I'm sure it's probably going to be YouTube and stuff like that when it releases.
So, cool.
I don't know. But yeah, so as soon as I get it, folks, I'll have it posted up or links posted up and all that stuff so you can see my ridiculous self.
I noticed that you haven't updated your bio on like Instagram. It should say like actor now. Right?
Right.
I can't see too good. Is that Tom Cruise over
there? You gotta go there with some IMDb.
And weren't you like a key grip and some other things you were doing during that shoot?
Yeah, I did a few things over there.
To be honest, I'm not even sure what a best grip is. I would see it sounds cool.
My mom has it.
I picture it's just like a guy holding an off-screen microphone or something.
That's the job I want.
I want the job. Have you seen where it's like a mechanized Arri Alexa camera suit?
Yes. The suit, yes.
And he's like moving. You ever seen like how they move through buildings? That is impressive.
Yeah, that's a crazy, crazy
Or if you've ever looked for like the booms on cars to film like chase scenes. Like I assumed when you watch like the second Matrix where they're having the car chase on the motorcycle chase on the freeway. I assume like that all that was just VR, but it's not.
No. What was Potato Jet? If you go Potato Jet's YouTube channel and start scrolling through it, you will find not only the suit he's talking about, but you will find whenever they're showing the car that they're driving is like isn't it like some Dodge Hemi station wagon that they're running around in? It's like 700 horse or something. Like it's something ridiculous with this giant thing on it, this big arm for shooting video, like some crazy gimbal that's massive, and it's awesome. Yeah, it's really awesome.
I had no idea that's how they shot films.
No.
You know, just something you never really think about. When I think about shooting films, I think back to like some clips of Raiders of the Lost Ark being filmed, you know, Steven Spielberg.
You picture like the guys actually still turning the little handle to make the film turn.
Upgrade. I was thinking like, I've seen some behind the scenes of like Roger Deakins and things like that's what I'm thinking. I wasn't thinking of a mechanized like bodysuit. And I saw one where it was people I know are totally like, what are they talking about? Like this camera on a boom. And
I need to film him doing this, folks. Like his arms are out.
Well, because I'm trying to describe, like, it had like a 30-foot boom, but yet it was so balanced, perfect.
Yeah.
That you could just like touch it and move it with just like the touch of the weight of your finger.
Yeah. I urge everyone to go check those. Like I said, it's on Potato Jets on his YouTube channel, and it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's fun to watch to see the behind the scenes of how they do some of that
stuff. I was going to say, I get drawn in by stuff like that. Like, it's not even something I want to learn to do, but just watching it, I get drawn in. Like, there used to be this show called, like, How Things Are Made.
No, How It's Made.
And it's like a very boring monotone narrator. But I mean, I will sit there and be like, I didn't know that's how they made, I don't know.
Golf balls.
And you'll be like, I get drawn into that. I'm like a largemouth bass. Like have something shiny. Like I can't.
Like a crow. If there's something shiny and moving, you're just focused on it nonstop. Like, I'm
interested.
Yeah.
And that's what happens to me. I get lost on YouTube sometimes because then something else cool comes up and you're like, what?
That's another game that we haven't told y'all that we play after all these years is like, I will find something that I find entertaining, but that I know will drive Kyle crazy. And he does the same thing to me, and he will just text me a video, or I'll just text him the link. Here's the video. Check this out, man. I think you'll like it. At about 7 minutes in, So that way it forces him to look at least 7 minutes in, right? And he's not going to fast forward 7 minutes because that's not what kind of person he is. But he'll watch the 7 minutes. And then he'll talk to me the next day and he's like, hey, ass, thanks, because I was up 3 hours chasing these things down the rabbit hole. It's the most fun to do to people.
And I love it when it's something like you've never even heard of. You're like, what? That's a thing?
Right.
I remember just years ago, it was like, I don't remember what it was, like some kind of precision, that's a hard word to say, precision air rifle from like South Africa. Yeah. I was like, that's a thing? I didn't know you could do that. The only thing I ever saw was like, what's the one where the guy walks around with the...
Red Rider.
No. No. No Country for Old Men.
Oh, where he's got... Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is like a giant canister pneumatic rifle. I had no idea this was a thing. Apparently, because of laws there, they're not allowed to have firearms. But there's loopholes there in South Africa as well as like in the United Kingdom. And so they have these jam-up air rifles. Not like the stuff we have. Not like Gammos. Or like when I was a kid, there was Benjamin. I was kind of trying to think of some of the other.
Daisy.
These things, I'm talking like $2,500 FX Bobcats. And then there's a guy named Ted's Holdover. Yeah. I got down that path and I'm like, man, what am I doing?
Makes you want one. I'm like, I want one other than else just to say I've got an awesome pellet gun. I'll never own one, but it would be fun to have.
I'll never own one either, but it's like cool to watch.
Yeah.
I got wrapped into watching guys kayak fish. Your buddy Robert Field. I'm trying to think. They were in New Zealand. Like, you know, I'm never going to probably go to New Zealand. I would like to, but I would end up watching like 8 hours of dudes kayak fishing.
Yeah. Robert Field, y'all can check him out. He's a buddy of mine. So, yeah, he's got a channel on YouTube that's showing where he's in Panama and all that stuff, offshore kayak fishing.
I get drawn in.
I got you something you're going to like. As long as we're talking about kayak fishing, this segues perfectly into it. You know how we were always talking about like manta rays and people were seeing flying rays?
Yeah, my son had a ray pierce his entire foot.
Oh, this is true. But it wasn't flying. It was laying in wait like a ninja.
Caleb was flying ninja all the way back to the beach house.
Ninja ray. Well, apparently this isn't something that's new. This isn't something in the last 30 years that we've talked about it. Listen to this. This is a report, folks, from St. Petersburg, Florida, in the newspaper there in 1957. It says, dazzling white lights, moving bodies, and things soundless seen over city. A dazzling white light in the sky yesterday at around 5:20 a.m.
Hey, y'all see that real bright light?
Yeah, this one.
Did you just see a real bright light?
Brought reports of new heavenly mysteries. I don't know why I like the word heavenly mysteries, but here we go. Mr. and Mrs. Tom Clark and Mr. and Mrs. C.G. Dillman, they were both route carriers, apparently paper delivery here back in the time, that said were among those reporting it, that Clark described it as a dazzling light with a long orange tail. Then Dillman said there was a flashing oval that was reddish white, the kind of light that radiates from high temperatures. It flashed westward and then disappeared in 10 or 15 seconds. Dillman goes on to say that he was certain it was not a rocket or a jet or a meteor. The Clarks placed the time at 5:25 a.m. Dillman was not certain of the time, but it said that it was near that hour. Goes on to say, listen, it looked like a manta ray with a curling orange tail, said Clark. It was an eerie sight, Dillman said, and said that he had been discussing Wednesday morning with the Times the stories of these strange lights in the skies a half hour before he saw the flare. Now it says here, I didn't quite believe these things, I do now, said Clark. Said was seated in the rear of the car and Mrs. Clark was driving when the white light suddenly appeared. I could see it through the windshield of our car, so it must have been close to Earth, Clark says. In 4 or 5 seconds, it dipped earthward and disappeared behind the treetops. The Clarks were driving north on 51st Street between Emerson and 5th Avenue South. The Clarks said the object made no noise and was moving very fast. The moon was setting in the east of, and this object, whatever it was, made so much light that it blotted out the moon. And that's what the Clarks reported. So, in 1957, now this was actually cited November 7th of 1957, So in the, you know, basic winter time as we're starting down there, what they describe all, but here's what's wild. They say it looks like a manta ray and all that, but it also has the same characteristics of a UFO, of a typical UFO.
Yeah. And there's been several sightings over the years that I've read about where similar descriptions where the vehicle itself looks like a manta ray, yes, or people see what looks like a manta ray flying and they think it's like a physical being. Do you remember the Phantom Menace, the terrible Star Wars movie when they relaunched? There in the beginning, Qui-Gon Jinn, a young Obi-Wan Kenobi, mm-hmm, and Jar Jar Binks are underwater.
I remember that.
Do you remember that craft? It looks just like a manta ray. I just wonder if...
Where it's got the motor, it looks like it's got three fins that spin.
I wonder if they had read these stories of manta ray and decided to make that craft look like that.
And it does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Right. I don't know.
Yeah. That would be interesting because we know that they've taken a lot from ufology and added it kind of like as an homage to some of the stories that they've kind of mixed in. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if I found out that that's what some of the creators were looking up and reading while they were making that film and found that and just went with it.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Check this out. This is a listener of ours sent this story in. It says, hello, my name is Garrett Allegue. And Garrett, I apologize if I mispronounced your name. I'm dumb. But Garrett, it says, I'm a 21-year-old firefighter. First off, Garrett, thank you for your service. My brother is also a firefighter. He says, I grew up in a medium-sized city in North Louisiana called Shreveport. Well, we definitely know where Shreveport is. Me and Cam both have been there numerous times. But he says, when I was around 11 to 13, I encountered a large black triangle coming home one summer evening. This craft was about the size of 2.5 houses, not totally massive like I've seen in other stories. It had three solid white lights on the corner or points of the triangle and one blinking red light directly in the center on one side. I believe to be the rear of the craft. It had either panels or windows that were lit from inside in an array of different colors, which all somehow bled into the light, and they pulsed and flashed in no real order. The craft was maybe 300 to 400 feet away and was what I believe to be just above the treetops, but I was viewing it at an angle, so perspective might have affected my estimates. It spun on an axis, staying perfectly in one spot, just rotating. I thought I was able to hear a hum, but I was close to a train yard, so it may have been noise pollution from that. After what felt like hours, but must have been at most 10 minutes, it sped up its rotations. I could feel wind coming from it, and it shot off towards Cross Lake in the city of Shreveport. After I went inside and tried to wrap my head around what I just saw, I heard two fighter jets and saw them zoom past my house and then heard the sonic boom from them as they crossed over the lake. Now, I live very close to the Barksdale Air Force Base, which houses the majority of the USAF B-52 bomber fleet and has Global Strike Command. The next night, the local news, the KSLA, or Channel 12, said that many other people saw the same UFO, but that it was just the Goodyear blimp. Now, I know I did not see the blimp. If so, why hover over a residential area so close to the ground? If you have any questions, you can contact me. I love what y'all do, blah, blah, blah. Thank you so much, Garrett, for sending that in. I'm going to point out a couple things here on this sighting. Number one, whether it's the Belgian Wave or other mass sightings of these triangle craft, they're all described the same way. Usually red lights or white lights. I'm sorry, white lights normally, sometimes red, on the tips of the triangle, and then either a white in the center light or a red one or vice versa. Or combinations, but I know that you've brought this up many times. If they're extraterrestrial, why do they have lights on the tips of their wings? Why do they have blinking lights, things like that? It seems totally unnecessary.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive for what they're trying to do.
Unless it's something else that we're just unaware of. Like, you know, why? I'm sure an extraterrestrial from another planet wants to know why people buy trucks, lower them, and then put lights underneath them.
Yes.
There's no real reason. Just people do it because they think it looks cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, why would I put hydraulics on a 64 Impala? Because why not? You know,
there's only two ways I look at the lights on there. Either the lights are on there because we built it and as you know what I mean? And they need it for safety, or they think, they being the aliens, that they put lights on it and they just blend in with everything else in the sky because that's the way it is.
Yeah, maybe it's a massive troll. They're purposely coming here trying to make us believe it's top secret aircraft that we're designing, and really, no, it's just a troll.
Or they're just messing with
us. It's the long con, as they call it.
That's right.
Right? You know?
That's exactly what's going down.
I don't know. But he does mention that there is an Air Force base near there. You know, perhaps it's some kind of testing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's from another country. Like, you know, we talk about these breakaway societies that's there spying on that Air Force base.
Yeah.
I mean, he talks about the, you know, the B-52 squadron, the Global Strike Force that's there. I don't know. But it is similar to a lot of other stories. And like we've talked about many, 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 many times, is I don't know why the shapes of the things change. Like when Kenneth Arnold saw them, they look like, you know, discs.
Yeah.
And now they seem to look like triangles.
I don't know why they changed.
Is it just a different
model?
You know, that's why a Volkswagen looks completely different than...
I like to believe so.
A Ferrari, you know what I mean?
I like to believe it's all different models.
Or is it the same producers, just an upgraded version? Like, that's a sports car and that's a sedan, you know? I don't know.
Well, you would think that if a a disc shape would get you here, why would you worry about building any other shape?
Yeah.
Right? Unless it's just... because they're just different models. Some are more as for probing, like they just go out like little reconnaissance aircraft. Others are more of like the mothership,
you know,
where the round ones go back to the big triangular one, and then that one will go into a giant hexagon, and then that will go into a decadohedron, a gonagon, and on. You know, who the heck knows?
Right, and we always assume that it's being piloted. Like, maybe it's a drone. Maybe it's a drone from galaxies away. I mean, there's guys that sit...
Now, that would be dope if you could drive, like, light years away, you could fly a drone.
Dude, there's guys that sit in Arizona and fly drones in Iraq.
Yeah, but that's not light years away, bro.
No, but they have better technology. Who even knows? Right?
I'm with you.
Who even knows if any of this is real? Yeah. This is all... You're going to wake up. When you die, you think you die.
I did see something where a guy had posted, one of the doctors had posted it. There's a 50-50 chance you're in a simulation.
Yeah, I mean...
We're going to wake up and we're going to be like, whew. And you're going to think you lived your whole life and it was only like a 15-second DMT trip. And you just woke up from it. Like,
it was just
a
cat nap. And then you got to go back to mine and spice and you're in a planet called Dune or whatever.
Arrakis.
Yeah, that's
it. You're on Arrakis. All right. Look, enough with the Arrakis. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, I'm going to be talking about... I should not have been left alone, but I'm just going to be talking about Bigfoot habitation areas and their correlation with abductions and how one happens and one doesn't and kind of the crossover and some different stories that tie those together. And I think you're going to find it extremely interesting. Let's take a quick one. We'll jump back. We'll discuss it. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Here we go. Story time with Uncle Ham one more time. I was talking to a couple of friends of mine, Rob and Blake, from the podcast, The Stickbow Chronicles. And I did some stuff with them, and they had me on, of course, you know, to talk about Bigfoot and missing hunters, things like that. They wanted to do, and it was my idea when I was talking to Rob, we wanted to do a story that, or do something for their Halloween episode, right? And so I come on and talked about missing hunters and hunters that are having having encounters or problems with the Sasquatch, things like that. And then let Rob know that he lives like in the biggest hotspot in Idaho. He lives in Bonner County, Idaho, and it is wild, the number of sightings, if you start looking in there. So, I mean, it's undoubtedly it's some real rough country in that area. But it was after I'd got off the air with him and was sitting around, you know, thinking and just looking at all the other stuff that I had, I started wondering about habituation sites. It was something that had just, for some reason, and I didn't even discuss it with them, but for some reason it had stuck in my mind. I had, you know, we had Pat on talking about Elkins Creek and the encounter that the older couple had there. And that kept running through my mind. And just the idea of a habituation site, of something where you know without a doubt that there's going to be activity there. And for that not to be taken more serious by a, any sort of Bigfoot or cryptid researcher and figure out some way to get some sort of evidence. It feels like a travesty in part of that whenever these come. Now, I do know, and you all know listening, that sometimes, of course, people will talk about having these habituation sites, and then it turns out that it's really, it's a tall tale, that strange things are happening, but they've really not had the true Bigfoot encounters that they are claiming that it is. That, you know, one and two doesn't add up. And then there are some to where it's like, there's all kinds of activity. There's sightings, there's footprints, there's, you know, the knocking, the calling. There's places that actually have a lot of activity. And so it just, I don't know, for some reason, just the idea of the habituation site, the idea of there being juvenile or babies, because I'm like, where would you raise a child? Where would you raise a baby Bigfoot? You would want to raise it someplace safe, but also someplace that had, you know, good food, good water, good everything that you would need to become raise a growing Bigfoot kid. I would think that you would never see Bigfoot juvenile or Bigfoot babies, because in my mind, if these things are that elusive and then they also know that their children are that important, you would never see a female Sasquatch. You would think no matter how deep in the woods you went, like those female Sasquatch with babies would be like keyed in to like turned up to 11 is what you would think. But it's not necessarily always that way. Hence the habituation site. It's weird that these animals that try to stay gone from us and hidden from our sight and out of our minds want to stay away from us. If they're really there, like we said, we got to say that. We can't, you know, pile all the stones in one pile. If it's a real animal, then you would think that it would want to be as far away from us as possible, like it's doing a pretty good job, that they would never be a habituation site. No one would have these interactions. But it seems like a lot of these stories that you hear with habituation sites is this tribe or this group are way more social. They're way more open to the reception of it. And, of course, then that gets the wheels turning is all of these stories like we did with Zana, all of these, were they really, are they a Bigfoot? Are they Neanderthal? Are they, you know, some other kind of relic hominid? And we have had relationships with them in the past. And somewhere down the line that's severed and they're just the scragglers and they're trying, some of these are trying to bring it back. You know, they understand it and they deal with it. So I'm looking around trying to find these stories and trying to see if there's any sort of interaction with like juveniles or interaction with this. And I come across a funny story out of Bedford County, Virginia, back several years ago that ABC 13 in that town actually took a phone call from a person who had called the sheriff's office claiming that she had seen a Bigfoot. Now, when she called in is the best part, you know, instantly when she calls in, she goes, "Hey, look," to the dispatcher. They played the dispatcher's recording. She says, "Hey, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I saw a Bigfoot carrying a baby." And then she tells where it is, exactly where she was at. She even goes back to say, they start talking about, of course, the baby. And like, no, not a human baby. Not like it stole a baby. Said this baby, y'all will love this, looked just like Chewbacca. Just a little version, like a Chewbacca toddler, which first of all sounds adorable, right? Like, could you imagine even seeing that? A baby Chewbacca with the full, you know, everything on it would be great. But apparently this woman witnessed this, and after it had crossed the road, did the whole thing, she turned around and come back and found its tracks and said that she couldn't step that far, went back and really checked it out, but goes on to talk about, which was the neatest part, said when she first passed. Now, of course, when she saw this thing, she didn't go back that night. She saw it at about 9 o'clock. She went back the next morning, which is probably smart. But says that when she passed the Bigfoot and the baby, that the baby made direct eye contact with her. And that's weird, right? Because you would think, now, you know, babies are, of course, naturally curious, doesn't know to be afraid. But you would think that the mother would be maybe a lot more cautious than to have the baby up by the road. I mean, it sounds crazy knowing just how skittish these things really are for the babies to be out there, or for there to actually be juveniles involved with people. And so I start thinking along those lines. And then I start thinking back about, and what I'd brought up and didn't really discuss with them on the podcast was the Albert Ostman story. And y'all should all remember the Ostman story of the fella that was out there panning for gold way back in the day. You can even find videos of him on YouTube talking about what happened to him, but where he was abducted by Bigfoot and in his sleeping bag, right? Thrown over his shoulder, and that Bigfoot carried him back into the woods. Y'all remember he named him. I think he carried him like 3 or 4 hours. He talked about it and talked about the noises that they make and the whole thing. But I do remember him talking about that he believed there was a father, and he said that was like 8 foot tall. And then the mom was like, and two smaller ones, and they were like 7 foot tall and then like 6 foot tall. And he named them. But the really coolest thing is in some of his stuff that he talks about, in some of his quoting, it says that the young fellow might have been between 11 and 18 years old and about 7 foot tall, and might weigh about 300 pounds. Says his chest would be 50 to 55 inches, his waist about 36, 38, and he had a wide jaw and a narrow forehead that slanted upward and round at the back, about 4 or 5 inches higher than the forehead. It says the hair on their heads was about 6 inches long, and the hair on the rest of the body was short but thick in places. And then he talks about the woman's hair and how it looked. And here's the best thing was that it says he's guessing that the woman that he saw there, the woman Bigfoot, would have been anywhere between 40 and 70 years old and weigh between 500 and 600 pounds. And you remember the stories, the whole thing. He ends up giving them snuff to end up getting them sick so he can get away, because they had him pegged in there, right? Like they had him locked in or something, or trapped in a little cave, however the whole deal went. So I was like, man, that is crazy. You know, the very first time we read it, the very first time we covered it, because of that interaction, why would you bring him back? If it was food, you would just kill him and bring him back. You wouldn't bring him back alive. There'd be no reason to bring him back alive. You know, if it was going to be one of those things, it's way easier to subdue him and bring him back. So undoubtedly it wasn't that. So it makes you think it's more about breeding, right? Like maybe he's supposed to be there to breed with one or both females, maybe to help the bloodline, whatever it is. But anyway, he gets away, the whole thing. Now there's other stories, of course, of these abductions by Bigfoot. And all of this just makes me keep leading back into that habituation thing. Is there's an interaction that not all of them try to have with people. Like you hear these sightings, I'm beginning to wonder if the paralleling of people, the hunters and hikers and stuff, when they talk about Bigfoot paralleling them, they believe it to be aggressive. Although it's, of course, we wouldn't know the stories when the people went missing. Maybe that's what was going on when they went missing. But during this time, you would have to think maybe that's its way of interacting. That's its way of playing. It doesn't know what it's doing to us. Like we, you know, if you take away the idea that it knows with infrasound and mind reading ability and all that's not the kind of Bigfoot we're dealing with, that we're dealing with something that's more primitive. Maybe it doesn't understand that whole thing. And so that's the reason, of course, it acts the way it acts. You don't know. But if you go, like, there's another crazy story that took place in Canada. A young lady, 17-year-old woman, was kidnapped back in 1871 by a large Bigfoot. And this was in BC up there in Canada. Now, according to the female that was taken, she was held captive by Bigfoot and its family for almost a year. Now, she claims to have been sexually assaulted by this male Bigfoot, and that after this while, that the big male Bigfoot just picks her back up, takes her back out, and dumps her pretty much where he found her. And then, of course, the tale goes on that she ended up giving birth to a baby. The baby was stillborn and all this. So it makes you wonder there, if this story's true, it makes you wonder if, did he know that he was trying to breed with her? And when she wasn't falling pregnant, when she wasn't showing, when he couldn't tell that he had got her pregnant, then he was like, well, there's no use in keeping this one. I'm going to take it back. He didn't kill her. He didn't do it. He just took her back and dumped her because she's not able to have his children. And so again, this habituation stuff is, if if this goes on and there's these encounters of these things happening with these abductions and these forceful things, why does that not bleed over into the habituation sites that we hear about? Why are is there some like this that they go and get you and take you to their place in the woods? Others live in the woods behind your place. So you would think if in the habituation site that you knew where they were comfortable and this is the area and they're staying in the back of your property, you would think that that would be one of the most dangerous places on the planet to be at any moment because you're dealing with an 8-foot-tall monster. So how would you go about even defending yourself against that other than handguns and shotguns and all that? You would think habituation sites would be incredibly dangerous, but they are not. We get some weird stuff happening with the gifting trees and the gifting stumps and gifting rocks where they leave things there and Bigfoot replaces it with things they like. We get some crazy sightings. We get all of these things, but we don't get the violence that you would think would come with it if we're talking about some of these abduction stories. So undoubtedly, it's not an animal that all act the same way. There's not an all-knowing thing like they're all going to do this during a certain breeding season. They don't. So maybe these habituation sites are those a whole different, like we said, a whole different species or a whole different twist on it. They're the good ones. They're the kind ones. They're the ones that are trying to interact with people. Now, man, there is a story, another one, about a relationship between a woman named Oksana. She's 19 years old. She was kidnapped again by some sort of Bigfoot after she had become lost. Story goes that she had been picking berries and, you know, was eating these berries and was kind of lost. And she ended up telling the story that she saw what she described later on that looked to her like an orangutan. So she's terrified, right? So she passes out, which is completely understandable. She comes to, and when she wakes up, she's in a cave. Now she says that she can see light in the cave, but it's very dark, and that she can hear water, the sounds of water running, and that sitting next to her was this orangutan-looking thing, and that it was just had this sinister look on its face, just hanging out. Well, so the story goes, it attacks her, aggressively attacks her. She passes out, wakes up. It's tried to get the clothes off of her, this whole thing. She realizes that she's stuck in this cave with this thing, right? And she feels like it's now taken a liking to her, and it's like claimed her. So it's she feels like now I'm, I guess, his property. I don't know what I'm going to do. But that every time this creature would leave, there was a boulder, a big rock, that it would roll up to the mouth of the cave and plug the cave and leave her there where she could just see a little bit out of there, right? But she could never get out. So, and she said that it would return with food, like offerings and berries and fish and whatever. Nothing was, of course, cooked. It was just the way it was. Now, what's funny is she had a CD player with her. And apparently this thing loved jamming, liked the music. And then finally, of course, said that the batteries ran out on the thing. Now, here's where the story gets wild. The thing dies. I guess it leaves it playing. This thing gets real mad, starts going nuts, comes back with batteries. That's one of the stories I'm like, wait a second now. This thing knew what batteries were. But anyway, story goes on. You know, she ends up finally, this thing's gone one time, forgets to put the thing back just right and escapes. And she escapes, gets loose. This whole deal. And there's a lot more to the story about their interaction. And it's one of those that, look, it's a great story, but it's almost too good to be true. When you read it, like she's teaching it how to make fire. She's teaching it, you know, how to do all these things where it's almost like this thing that she's with isn't really a Bigfoot. It's more like a guy that's just mentally deranged and has left society years and years and years ago. And he's just dirty and hairy and mentally unbalanced, if you will. So of course she gets out and the really wild thing about the story, and I'll just wrap it up with you with this part of the story is story goes that she gets away. She makes this escape. She gets back to civilization after being gone like a year. I think she was gone or maybe a little longer, but she gets back. They find her. They listen to the story. They think she's just gone crazy and been homeless. They don't know what to do with her. They send her to, you know, clean her up, get her to the hospital. They send her to a mental institution because she's in this deep, deep depression. And they said after she's been there for about 4 or 5 months and it's really not helping, she's just getting deeper and deeper into it. She starts telling everybody that this thing knows where she's at. Like it knows I'm here and it's coming for me. And she starts telling everybody. So people are, they're kind of like, oh my goodness. Well, one day in the middle of the night, they hear something go down and sure enough, something gets tore up and she's gone. And there are a few patients that were still there, 5 or 6 of them. Then they all swore to witness that this big hairy man thing showed up, broke into the place, got her and left. So undoubtedly, maybe she wanted to go back. I don't know. But that's a pretty wild story. But again, we're still talking about the idea of Bigfoot taking a bride or taking something and making its own habituation site with a human being. So, like we said, we got some that live there by people's houses. Now we got some where they're bringing them out into the country, sticking them in a cave. It's so strange because you would think it should be one way or the other. There shouldn't be a swing of either or. And so here's another thing. You don't ever hear like dog man habituation sites. You hear of habituation sites and you hear of, like we said, Bigfoot abductions, but you don't ever hear dog man abducting people or living around someone's house. And it's probably, of course, because like we've talked about, is it is extremely, extremely negative. You know, this thing is not fun to be around. But for some reason, Arkansas has always been a hot spot, right? We all talk about Falk. We talk about all this. But Arkansas seems to always be a hot spot for Squatch. And I think it's with states that start with A, because Alaska is another one of those hot spots for Squatch around this place. But this is a very interesting story I wanted to share with you. It says, I have followed sightings since 1976. Now, that year I encountered a creature I believed didn't exist. The first incident, I laughed off. My cousin came running into my bedroom one night and jumped into bed with me, saying something big just walked by the window. I live in a community called Genoa, Arkansas, not far from Falk, a very rural community. We had a horse corral right behind our trailer, so I thought she had just seen a shadow from one of the 3 horses that we owned, and I just laughed at her and went back to sleep. The second incident happened late in May, right before school was out. I was in my bedroom studying for finals. My dad came to the door of my bedroom and motioned for me to be quiet and to follow him. So I followed him to his bedroom, and he whispered to listen. Through the open window came a loud sound of maybe an elephant with respiratory problems. I spent a lot of time in the woods and bottoms, and I've never heard anything like that. My dad went and got his .357. He was a retired police officer, and I had never seen him afraid. I begged him to not go outside, and he finally relented. A couple of nights later, I had to go out in the middle of the night to feed a bawling calf. I was standing there feeding the calf, and I noticed our horses standing up against a pine thicket that connected the corral to the pasture. I had the back porch light on, and my eyes were adjusting to the darkness. I could see the reflection from the light, and I counted sets of eyes. There should have been 3, but there were 4. One set was about a foot above the tallest horse's head. They were round and red. My eyes were still adjusting to the darkness, but I could see the outline of what looked like the shape of a huge person. I was in shock. We stood there, eyes locked. It was maybe 20 feet from me. I popped the bottle out of the calf's mouth and backed to the door. I've never told my dad or anyone for years because the creature could have easily gotten to me. And we came to an understanding. It protected our animals in exchange for the food it took from the horse feed in the garden. I always knew when they were gone because the coyotes would start showing up again. Now, how interesting is that? The fact that they're feeding Bigfoot to look after the horses. taking care of all the critters around there and keeping the coyotes away. Sounds like a pretty good trade-off. But again, there's nothing aggressive about that sighting. Not one thing about that was like, oh, it's a little iffy. But it wasn't. Nothing aggressive about that sighting. So I don't, like I said, I don't understand the idea of some Bigfoot grabbing folks and doing bad things to them. And some of them are like, well, you know what? I think I'll work for you. You seem pretty cool. You know, you give me some, I don't know, maybe, of course, beef jerky. We all know Bigfoot likes beef jerky. Maybe some sandwiches, maybe something along those lines. Bigfoot will do whatever it needs to do to make sure it can continue to get them, which I thought was, or at least I think, is very, very awesome. Now, there is another little story here from 1987 that says on June 1st of 87, 16-year-old Teresa Beer and 43-year-old Russell Welch left to go on a camping trip in the Sierra National Forest. Now, y'all might remember this. And it says the two were apparently quite attracted to Bigfoot phenomenon, and they wanted to catch a glimpse of one. But at some point, both became separated, and Teresa would vanish without a trace. And then, of course, the authorities and all the police and everybody started questioning Welch at the time, and they thought that he had done something, and he started telling people that she was abducted by Bigfoot. Well, of course, all the law enforcement, they started coming down on him hard, right, digging into. They could never find any evidence that anything happened. So they let him go. And then, of course, apparently, you know, says here that, you know, the body was never found, and it was unclear what had even happened to it. So if the story was true, then and he didn't kill her, then Bigfoot legitimately took that young girl and ran off. That's not the only one. There was another one of a person named Jason Richardson that was in Northern California in South Lake Tahoe at Mount Talek. Jason's like 48 years old. And he talks about at one point, he starts hearing the sound of what he described as a guttural human baby voice. And was afraid that maybe it was a real baby. So he ran over into where he heard it from the woods and claims that while he was there, he got knocked out. Something hit him. And that he woke up later and found blood from the back of his head and said that, it's blood, his head hurt and all this. And he said near him were two bear-like creatures and he was in some sort of cavern. Yeah. And that these things were making these grunting noises and these deep growling sounds as if they were communicating. And he claims that they looked somewhat human, but that they weren't, dead on. You could just tell that they were kin to us. He said the scariest part about it, and he thought from the head injury he was hallucinating, was that both of these stood, if he had to guess, between 8 and 10 feet tall. And he said at the time when he starts kind of getting his senses about him and he starts panicking a little bit, he realizes that his hands and feet have been tied. And then, of course, he goes on and he's quoted to say that they approached me and I wet my pants, literally. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I was so fearful. I had no idea if this was it, if this is how it was going to be. He said their necks were hairless and they reminded me of vultures. Their heads had red hair, but also black feathers. And I don't know what it was, but it did look like feathers to me. And their eyes were dark, very big. He goes on to say, as they got close to me, they got quite aggressive. They started dragging me and they kicked me, pulled me across the floor. He said, then they went off and when they came back, they had some sort of stone tool. He said, I don't know what it was for. And they cut his hands and feet loose. He was afraid to move. Then they pick him up and throw him out of the cave, y'all. So he says, man, I take off running. He says, as I'm running, rocks are hitting all around me. And he said, I ran and moved and kept going. He said, for what felt like hours and hours and hours. And sure enough, it took him around 10 hours before he could get back to any place, I guess, that maybe he recognized. As I guess he's running maybe down the creek. I have no idea. But just that, it's like they bring him back. They realize what he is. I don't know. Or what he's not doing or whatever it is. And they just toss him out. Pick him up. Sling him out of there. What's wild is that they had stone tools and feathers. Feathers in their hair. Which makes me again wonder, it's more like natives. It's more like a native group of them, and maybe that's how they adorn themselves, is they braid feathers into their hair. I don't know. Of course, anybody doesn't know it unless you were there. But there are so many tales of people that are getting abducted, and they end up getting let go, at least these do, and we don't really learn much because of course, you can't communicate. And those that do communicate and come back with these stories, no one wants to believe them. If you really dig into abduction stories and Bigfoot and you look at all of them, there's less than 100. So out of all the sightings that you get less than 100. Hell, there might be less than 20 that are truly credible. Something happened. Of course, I don't know how you could say credible. I don't know why I said credible. We don't know. But truly, there's not, it's not a real deep pool to fish from to get information, just like the habituation. I think that there's something involved in both of these that we could learn from. We just have to figure it out. I don't know what it would be. But I do like this story I'm going to share with you about another habituation. It says, in the middle of May in 2008, my grandson, who was 5 years old at the time, and I took my two dogs, both Rottweilers, for a walk in the wooded area next to my house. This place is approximately 100 acres that has not been clear cut, but it has had some areas logged off about 10 years ago and is growing up in thick bush. So we're walking an old tractor road, which intersects with another road. And at this junction, my grandson finds a pile of scat that was huge. The pieces, and they go on to describe the scat, 3 inches in diameter and 12 inches long, cross-piled on top of each other, three of them. And it looked like someone had squeezed a large tube of toothpaste. And it goes on to say that my dogs wanted nothing to do with it and avoided it at all costs. Now, that's an odd thing. That's odd. Goes on to say that we walked downhill about 100 feet when suddenly the dog stopped my grandson in his tracks and wouldn't let him go any further. They began whining and acting out of character. He asked me why they were acting this way, looking uphill towards me. And when I looked up to answer him, I saw downhill from us at about 50 yards, something standing partially hidden behind a large spruce tree. It was a large shape with a cone-shaped head, a shoulder, large chest, an arm and leg, rocking from heel to heel in that motion, peeking up the hill from behind the long boughs. At this point, I kept my grandson's attention towards me and said, maybe we should listen to the dogs and go for a walk another day. And when I looked up again, whatever was there before was now gone. I had never seen anything like this before and was kind of shocked and curious at the same time. We went home and I got a camera and went back to the location by myself to get a picture of the old scat pile. But it was gone. It was completely removed in a matter of 20 to 25 minutes. Now, since this occurred in the woods beside my house, I started to do some research. I typed up a quick description on Google and up popped Bigfoot Sasquatch. I had heard little of this, only in the 70s briefly, before that day. Now, the following I'm about to tell you is what happened since then. I have a small farm with cows and pigs and turkey and chickens and a couple dogs, which may have something to do with the things happening on a regular basis. So week one was April of 2009. I had a sighting of what I'm sure of now, a female Sasquatch, walk across the bottom of a small pasture behind my house. It was combing and eating rose hips from the bushes with its hands as it walked. It seemed to be looking for my pigs, but they weren't outside yet because it was too early. I normally house pigs for the summer in this area of my property that's wooded. I watched this thing walk very slowly across the property, looking at a stand of small evergreens that the pigs would hide in most of the day. I was sitting at the open window while this creature walked along as it continued eating rose hips. It stopped about 30 foot from the thicket and tried to peer into this area. When it didn't notice any pigs, after a few seconds, it just turned around. Twisting at the waist, it looked right at me with a kind of smirk on its face. I'm sure it looked me right in the eyes. And there was a feminine look to its face, which was a lot more human-looking than I thought it would be. I drew a sketch of what I saw and as it departed the woods behind my house. And I kept telling myself, well, that's what's made that large pile of crap you found. And I didn't go look for tracks or hair afterwards because I have a condition that causes my muscles to involuntarily shake for extended periods of time, similar to Parkinson's, but all over my body. And at that time, I didn't want a chance to have something happen to me. Now, on April 9th of 2009, I was peeling potatoes for dinner around 4:30 in the afternoon while standing in front of a small window facing the field across the road. The field is approximately 1,200 foot to the top. I saw movement, and I looked up. In the left corner, a creature appeared, very similar to the one I had seen the week before. Only this time, it was much larger. It had a very pronounced cone-shaped head, huge shoulders, no neck, very thick brow ridge, large barrel chest, and very thick muscular legs. I watched this thing walk, and it looked like it was carrying something on its left hip. While walking, I counted the number of steps it took for this to cross about 300 feet. It was 30 steps. When it reached the other side of the field, it turned left and used its right arm to push the branches and trees out of the way. It was then I noticed that it was carrying a baby, sitting on one of the large hips, and it had one leg wrapped around the small of its back and the head that looked around, you know, looked around the large one's arm. So it's holding it like a mom would on its hip. This creature was huge, at least 9 foot, 800 to 900 pounds, and approximately 4 foot wide at the shoulders. Not the baby, y'all. That'd be a big baby. Now, on April 3rd of 2010, now look how fast that jumped. So we went from April 9th of 2009 to April 3rd of 2010. I went for a walk with my grandson, who was 3 years old at the time. We were walking in the woods beside our house down the old tractor road in the same area where the pile of excrement was found in 08. While walking down the hill, my grandson slipped and fell hands first in cold water. When he cried out instantly, something mocked from the thicket approximately 50 feet away. When he repeated himself, he was mocked a second time in the same fashion. At this point, he looked at me and he said, "Who's making fun of me, Papa?" I told him I didn't know, but I said maybe they thought he was silly for crying over a little bit of water. And with that, we turned around and went home. On April 26th of 2010, I found the first footprint approximately a quarter mile south of my house near a swampy area by a pond a few hundred yards south of the second sighting. The footprint was approximately 15 inches long, 5 inches wide at the ball, and 4 inches wide at the heel. That's a good-sized track, right? Now, on May 25th of 2010, I found another footprint while walking the dogs on another old tractor road. Near the same area I found the previous print. This track was about 21 inches long, 8 inches wide at the ball, and 5 inches wide at the heel. Goes on to say that this track appeared on the side of a short 3-foot bank. There was a short skid mark at the top of the track, but the toes are clearly visible, as is the rest of the track. August 6th of 2010, while sleeping and shortly after midnight, a very strong odor came in the window, waking both my wife and myself from a sound sleep. The odor smelled like a mixture of skunk, rotten meat, and body odor. There were turkeys in a pen beside that side of the house. I did not see anything, but I could hear a bipedal crunching noise, like feet shuffling through forest litter. August 10th, 2010, at approximately 11 p.m., a bull in the pasture was mocked just outside the pasture. Thinking it was another cow, he went to investigate. He either smelled or saw that it was not another cow and became very frightened, running back to the barn as fast as possible and hid. When I investigated, the bull was pressed up against the barn wall, shivering from fright. This was witnessed by my wife and myself as we were both outside at the time. Now it goes on to say, on August 22nd of 2010, the same odor as before that woke me up from a sleep, except both farm dogs were going nuts. This is around 12:30 a.m. The next morning, 7 ears of half-eaten corn, were scattered all over the lawn and appeared to have been thrown at the dogs the night before. The dogs are inside an electronic fence. The corn landed at the limited distance from the dogs to reach safely. The closest source of corn was interspersed with soybeans in the field across the road. September 7th, 2010. While walking on the wood road, small rocks were being thrown at me. I could hear the rocks going through the leaves, and though I was not struck, and at the end of the rock throwing, a loud whoop sound was heard. Later on, I found a small track in the woods beside my house, about 100 yards from my yard. The track was about 7.5 inches long and 4 inches wide at the toes and 2 inches at the heels. September 8th, the dogs were very vocal all night. In the morning, several twisted trees were found about 50 yards from the house. October 1st, a strong odor drifted across the road from the south, witnessed by my wife and myself. It was mid-afternoon, and it was the same odor as before. And then on the 6th of October, he found some hair on a twisted tree. And this goes on and on and on, documenting all through 2011, all the way up, talking about all of these, taking pictures, taking photographs, all of these things that had happened. This habituation site is very healthy with activity, but not healthy with aggression. Now, yes, it ate some corn. It threw some corn at a dog. It even eats one of their chickens, but doesn't eat the whole thing. Looks like it just kind of bites it or plucks it and then leaves it. Like, it's headless. Like, it's not what you would think. You know, it's not one of those deals. It's like, oh, I would think that it would just destroy a chicken or take the whole chicken, or it would look like another bird had eaten it. It's just missing its head and a few feathers. I don't know what would just eat a chicken head and leave. Maybe Bigfoot. He just likes chicken heads. I don't know. So this whole thing goes down, but yet again, nothing aggressive happens. So why is it that we have tales of aggressive Bigfeets taking people, and then we have these tales of these habituation sites again that seem to be nothing more with a family trying to live its life? So I still don't think we know anything about anything that has to do with Bigfoot. We can't nail down what the heck they're even doing, why they're abducting people. We can't figure out their language. We don't know what they want to eat. We don't know where they live. It's truly a wonderful wooded mystery. I hope you enjoyed all that. I've got more to dig into, and I will probably add that to the next show, but I've got more to talk about that has to do with this and how it, like I said, it rolls kind of over into Alaska. For some reason, I always feel like Alaska is where Bigfoot should be from. Like, I would think that it should be nowhere else other than Alaska. I don't know why I feel that way, but that should be Bigfoot's land, is up in Alaska. That's his place. So I'm going to have some more stuff to discuss about a few habituation sites. And then I have some very, very strange stories that involve Dogman and some interesting other tales that we've received from a few listeners involving Dogman stories and the fact that they're not near as nice as habituation Bigfoot. So I hope you listen, you liked it and you listened and whatever, folks. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoy talking to this. I enjoy story time with Uncle Ham. I enjoy kind of just free ranging with my mind and talking to y'all and then getting y'all's messages, getting your emails, getting your phone calls. Shoot us some information. What y'all think about this habituation stuff and why it seems to swing so randomly. I'm curious, but I hope y'all enjoyed it. Folks, let's take a quick break and we'll wrap this baby up. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we are back.
Yes.
Crazy habituation stories. But you know what it does? It always sticks in my mind is why, if some are considered, as we know with these stories, some are considered violent and they abduct people, then you would think if there was habituation sites that it would be more apt to happen at the habituation site.
You're right.
But we don't seem to have any of that stuff. Also, since we were talking about manta rays, folks, I can't let you go without discussing this. This happened back in April this year. Of course, all the fun that went down. Florida man is at it again.
Oh, no.
He called 911, not once, not twice, but multiple times, asking for the deputies to help him out. He needed help, folks. Listen here. From Charlotte County, a Florida man was arrested after calling 911 multiple times and requesting that the deputies deliver him some alcohol and some ice cream. That's right. They responded to the call to a fellow named Michael Gable's house on a Saturday. He was 65 years old. When they got to the apartment, he requested that they take the $20 bill that he had placed on the couch and to bring him some liquor. And they had to explain, it says here, to old Florida man that the liquor delivery was not an emergency and that if he made the call again, he would be arrested on charges of misusing 911. So, of course, he says, man, I'm sorry. No idea. I won't let it happen again. Very next day, he calls back. They show up. He says, hey, man, this time, can you get my ice cream that was in the freezer? He goes, I can't get out of my recliner. He's laying in his recliner, drunk as all get out and wants his ice cream and calls the deputies to bring it to him. So you know what happens, of course. He got to spend the night down there in the old, what do they call it? I guess down there, would you
the
call
pokey?
Something? Yeah, but I'm not sure what Florida, they've got to have some kind of crazy name for it down there. But yeah, so he went to jail for that. Who thinks, of course, obviously you're not in your right mind, but yeah. So again, Florida man, back up to no
Don't
good.
Don't call the cops. Call like Uber Eats or what's the other ones? DoorDash?
Yeah.
Or like, can't you call one of them and like when they come over, like, listen, I just need you to deliver ice cream from my fridge to my recliner. That's it.
Yeah, right.
And I'll give you 20.
Dude, have you ever been so drunk you couldn't get up out of the recliner to get ice cream? I don't think that those two walk hand in hand. What I'm saying is if I'm that drunk, I don't even think about ice cream. Now, he may have been stoned. I've been under the influence
where I definitely couldn't move.
Oh, yeah. I've been there to where I was afraid to get up.
Couch locked. You're like, no, I'm not getting up. But, man, I am hungry.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that happen. Folks, one of the listeners out there has a YouTube channel and reached out to us. And so if you want to see some crazy conspiracy channel on YouTube, you need to look up 401 files. That's the number 401 and the word files. Just hop on YouTube, punch it in 401 files. He's got some pretty cool stuff up on there. Some really interesting.
Yeah, he does.
And help you burn up some time when you're tired of listening to Kyle and I, you can go check him out. You can go listen to them going on. Philly, what have you got? You've got a wild weekend. I know that. You got a wild weekend of baseball that's going to be all over the place. But outside of that, outside of being at the ball fields, do you have anything fun planned for your weekend?
Man, I wished I could tell you I did, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of fun going on this weekend. Hopefully I'm wrong.
The weather's going to be awesome.
The weather's going to be
cool
be nice.
For you to be there. Let me ask you this. How many more tournaments do you have?
Including this one, two more.
Oh, okay. I got you. Not many more left on the
boys'
play.
I'm sorry, three total. So this one and then two more.
Gotcha.
Yep, and then that's it. Then we don't play again till spring. I'm not going to lie. Kind of nice to have off.
Won't play again till he's a high school student.
Well, he'll play spring select ball, I guess. But I don't know how that works yet. We'll find out a little bit about that.
That'll be a whole bunch of stuff. So nothing fun for the weekend. I plan on being in the woods, so I'll be texting you from the stand. And let you know how that goes.
Luke has some kind of Monster Madness bash he's attending on Saturday. And he is going as a killer clown from outer space. But he also has purchased the jack-o'-lantern outfit from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Sorry, I'm not as versed in this as Luke is. And then he also has a Chucky outfit. So I'm not sure. We've already confirmed that we are going trick-or-treating with some friends. Like we always do. We don't know how well it's going to go with the whole COVID thing. Yeah. But to be honest, I don't think Luke cares. He just likes an excuse to dress up.
He just likes to go be scary.
He does. He loves it. I mean, like now that's like instead of like reading a book, now his thing is when he lays down to go to bed for like 20 minutes before he actually falls asleep, we watch Goosebumps together.
Oh, word. Yeah.
And it's like a little horror thing. And he likes that. Recently, a guy that we know gave Luke the whole complete DVD box set of Tales from the Dark Side. Did I mention that already?
Oh, no.
And, you know, some of the ones are kind of boring for Luke. He doesn't get into it. But anything with the creature, like there's one where a little creature's in the closet and stuff, Luke's all about it.
He goes crazy. I'm telling you, he needs to be an FX guy, like a special effects dude.
He really does. Yeah. I mean, this is his favorite time of year.
This is his thing. This is how he gets down. When all this COVID stuff lifts, we've always talked about it. We need to, and for everybody that ever comes down on that Texas Frightmare, we need to take him over there.
Yes.
We need to go. We need to get with Lyle, and we just need to go over there and deal with it.
You're right. And so, like, you know, a lot of things were canceled this year. I know a lot of the haunted houses that we take him to are canceled. Although I do think Cutting Edge is still open. I'm not sure how that works.
I don't know. That's like, y'all go to those things, not me.
Well, I go, and then I usually hang out with Caleb while everybody goes inside. Not because I'm scared, it's because it's the opposite. Like, I'm just like, yeah, it's a guy in an outfit. So
I don't want to be touched. I don't want to be jumped out at. I don't do well with that.
But if you want to touch us personally, you need to share your stories.
Oh, that's better. I didn't know where this was going.
With us, please, folks, the hotline. We need some stories, especially this time of year. It's time to share spooky stories.
Anybody
call that number.
Else?
888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. You can also email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
This is true.
But if you'd like to hear your beautiful voice on Expanded Perspectives, you got to call the hotline.
And we like to hear y'all call in.
Yeah.
Don't call in and go, hey, if you want to hear my stories, call me back. We're not going to do that. I want to hear your voice tell your story.
Yeah, because otherwise I'm reading the story. Yeah. If you're telling it, I don't have to do anything besides hit play.
Yeah, and I like to hear the emphasis, the way you tell the story.
It does make a difference when you hear the person that's actually had the experience with their own inflections.
I like it.
Of telling the story, where me, I'm assuming this is where a part where you got excited, depending on how well it's written.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I like to hear y'all tell it. It's awesome.
Right.
But if you don't want to tell it, just email it to us. I'll tell it.
There you go.
I might take a little creative advantage. I may lie a little bit.
Well, it's just embellishing.
I may embellish a little bit.
Adding a little.
You may say, yeah, it was frightening. I might be like, they were scared to death.
Yeah, that always makes
sense.
I might
throw that in there, you know? I mean, it happens.
I like the really descriptive ones. Something crazy.
You know what we need to do?
There's lots of stuff we need to do.
Isn't there a place around here? We've talked about doing it. Isn't there one down around San Antonio where you can go and put baby powder on the back of your car and you park and they're supposed to push you over the railroad tracks? Remember, we've talked about this.
I think there's several places in the U.S., but yes, I am familiar with that.
We need to go down there and try that out. We need to do a little film and see how that works. We need to take Luke down there for that action.
Yeah.
Oh, and real quick, folks, before we get out of here, I had done a whole story and a whole segment about the Baker Hotel in Mineral Wells. It's completely remodeled. They've already replaced 970-something windows in it. Like, it is, they're bringing it back. So hopefully, when they finally open it, we'll go over there and do some filming and talk about it and show it again.
Are they bringing it back just for people to stay at, or is it like a reason to go
there? I think they're going
to
make the whole bottom area of it all going to be shops and stuff again. It's going to turn into like a spa area. Like, it's revitalizing it. They're starting again with it. I think it'll be cool. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to go stay in it.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm going to have to. Dude, that's like a piece of history they finally got going.
Yeah, that's true.
It'd be fun just to go over there and say and be like, hey, look, I got to stay in it after it was opened.
There's got to be ghosts there, though, right?
Man. Yeah.
There's also that haunted house on the way to there.
Yes.
Remember we were at, I'm trying to remember, was that when we were in Glen Rose? We were at something.
The white clapboard house that's right in there. About. Yeah, I drove by it the other day.
Oh, you know where which house it is?
Yeah, I know where it's at. I went and looked at it. I don't even want to tell everybody. Yeah, we went over there. We was over in Mineral Wells, so we went and checked it out.
I need you to drop a pin on a map and send that to me.
We'll go over there. We'll check it
out. Because I might accidentally get the job to appraise it, and I'm going to be like, no, ooh, I'm turning that down.
Now that you say that, I'm not telling you. Yeah, I'm not telling you. I'm just going to let you find out on your own. All right, let's wrap this up. Let's let these folks go.
Let's wrap this up. All right, you know the deal. If you have a story you'd like to share with me and Cam, please email the show or call the show. You can follow the show on all forms of social media. That's about all the time we have for this episode. I'll be speaking to you people on the next Elite Show about some truck driver stories and some other ghosts seen out on the road, so tune in for that. You have to go to the website, expandedperspectives.com. Click on the Elite tab. Signing up is easy. $5 a month. You're helping out the show. You get extra content every month, as well as access to our entire back catalog. Stop wasting time, folks. Get on that Elite, and you can hear more of us. Be safe out there. Till next time, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.